Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. My name is Tom Tutal Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor and resiliency expert, helping people to think, speak, and act positively through the challenges of life. My co-host today is my good friend, my mentor, my coach, Brad Zolas.
Great. Thank you, Tom. My name is Brad Zolas, and I am the author of Liquid Leadership, From Woodstock to Wikipedia. And what that means, basically, is I delve into the generational divide. I help smart companies inspire and increase productivity by integrating millennials into your workforce culture. Anybody having problems with millennials out there? I'm the guy you call. Before we really, really dig in with today's guest, I want everybody to go get a pen and piece of paper or something to write with, because as you know, here on Journey to Success, we always interview the best and brightest minds that have started some pretty amazing movements, I would say. We don't just, am I right, Tom?
I wanted to interview people who were making a positive impact on the world. So this is today's guest for sure.
Excellent. Today's guest is Dr. Ivan Meisner. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is the founder and chairman of BNI, the world's largest business networking organization. BNI was founded in 1985. The organization now has over 6,600 chapters throughout every populated continent of the world. Last year alone, BNI generated 5.4 million referrals, resulting in over $6.5 billion worth of business for members. Called the father of modern networking by CNN and the networking guru by Entrepreneur Magazine, Dr. Meisner is considered to be one of the world's leading experts on business networking and has been a keynote speaker for major corporations and associations throughout the world. He has been featured in the LA Times, Wall Street Journal, and New York Times, as well as numerous TV and radio shows, including CNN, the BBC, and the Today Show on NBC. Dr. Meisner was recently named Humanitarian of the Year by the Red Cross. Oh, and by the way, in his spare time, he is also an amateur magician and a black belt in karate. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Ivan Meisner.
Hey. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. It's a pleasure being on.
Fantastic. I want to dig right in and just get right to the meat of this. How has networking changed over the past 30 years?
Well, you know, I clearly online networking, social networking, has added a great deal to the mix, and I think in for the most part in a positive way, because it enables people who meet one another, who don't live near one another, to stay connected. It particularly, I think, is effective for young people who have left college, and they want to stay in touch with some of the people who were close to them throughout their university or college experience. And, you know, when I graduated, when I did my doctoral degree in 93, there was no such thing as the internet. And there were a handful of people I would have loved to stay in touch with. But over time, you lose contact with these people. And, you know, sitting down and writing a letter or picking up a phone and calling them, at some point, there's only a few people left from that experience that you continue to do that with. Whereas with social media, you know, you can stay connected with people easily through Facebook or other mediums, LinkedIn. And it's funny because I've actually reconnected with many people from my past as a result of it. So that's one of the biggest changes that I've seen over the years.
Yes, in case some of you who are listening don't realize this, I think, Ivan, you saw a big, huge chunk missing in the marketplace, because if you went back to the 1950s, let's say, and even the 60s, most people belonged to a civic club, like a VFW, or they belonged to a Lions or Kiwanis Club or Rotary, and you got a lot of your business connections through those associations. Well, for some reason, over the years, as we came into the 70s and 80s, that fell out of vogue. So I think your timing was impeccable with that, wouldn't you say?
I think the timing was good. I think also there's another factor that is also related to timing, and that is that in the 70s and even until the mid-80s, most of those organizations that you're talking about were for men only.
You couldn't
join Rotary or Lions or Kiwanis. You know, certainly the military wasn't open to women, so VFW, a lot of those fraternal organizations, of course, didn't allow women in. And so you saw more and more in the 70s and 80s a proliferation of women-owned businesses. And when you have that, what you have are a lot of business people who are looking around and saying, you know, I can't play. I can't play in that context. So many women's business organizations were really about doing business because this was all new to them. And so I back in the 80s, I actually belonged to a women's business organization called NABO, National Association of Women Business Owners. And my partner in the business was a woman, and it was, you know, it seemed somewhat natural, but I was the one to go, which was really strange because I would go to these networking events with 100 women in the room, and I'd be the only guy. They would let token men in every now and then, you know. And there was no rule against it, but the thing is the guys didn't want to go. Now, here's the beauty of it is as long as you're A, not a male chauvinist pig, or B, not looking for a date, you can do great in these women's business organizations because you stand out. You know, everyone who competed with me that was in the room had a disadvantage in that everyone knew who I was and what I did because I was almost always the only guy. So what I saw was women really focused on business. And I realized that there was a need that really wasn't being tapped in the business community to have both men and women focus on getting together meeting a network and really just focusing first and foremost on business.
That's interesting that you brought that up because I'm a big fan of the diversity model, and you come up with ideas by using people of different backgrounds, different genders, different generational backgrounds. And this is an era when you started going to these women business groups. This was the era of women wearing shoulder pads in their suits, and you know, Dallas and Dynasty were on, and this was brand spanking new. And for you to go in, A says two things. You're a pioneer and you're fearless. And the other thing is there's a side to the way women do business and networking that's very different from men. And this is something I want to talk about because men have a tendency to be hunters. We spirit and then we feed ourselves, okay? Women, on the other hand, are more like farmers. They kind of they plant the seeds for each other. They see the bigger picture. They see a network as their source, their tool. And do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's a fascinating model in this day and age as well.
Yeah, you've got two really interesting points there. One is the diversity question. I think by nature, networks are by nature clumpy. That's the technical term. Clumpy. They're cluster-like. We tend to hang out with people like ourselves. You know, they look like us, they sound like us, they have a similar educational background, a similar socioeconomic demographic. And the truth is that if you want to build a powerful personal network, it needs to be diverse. Because if you have people in your personal network who don't look like you, sound like you, don't have the same background, don't have all the same interests, then you have somebody who is a connector. They connect you to other clumps, to other clusters of people that are more like them. And so you see, the more diverse your network, the more likely you are to have connectors who connect you to these other clusters of people. And that's counterintuitive because people like to hang out with people like themselves. You know, they just gravitate to people with similar interests. But that doesn't work well in building a network. So that was your first point, which I think is critical. Mm-hmm. The second point is even more interesting, and that's the difference between men and women and how they network. You guys may or may not know, I wrote a book on that. It's called Business Networking and Sex, Not What You Think. That's the subject. Not What You Think.
I'm already interested.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Well, it's the whole book is about the difference between men and women and how they network.
Right.
And we based it on a survey of 12,000 people we did all over the world, worldwide, not just BNI members, open to the public, 12,000 people. And we found something really close to what you were talking about just now. We found that men are more likely than women, based on surveys of 12,000 people, to be more transactional in their networking. Hi, my name's Ivan. Let's do business. And, you know, right. Just get right to doing business. Women tend to be more relational in the way they do business. For example, I mean, here's a really good example. One of the women I interviewed that talked about this, and I saw a perfect example of it, actually. But it jumped out at me when I heard this woman talking about this. She would go to networking events, and rather than start with, so what do you do? Tell me about what you do. Instead, she would start with a question like, how did you hear about tonight's event? And I saw a woman do that not long after. And I was there with another guy and this woman. And one woman asked another woman, well, you know, how'd you hear about the event? And the woman starts to say, oh, you know, I have a really good friend. Her name is Sally. And Sally invited me. And the woman who asked the question said, Sally? You know Sally? I know Sally. How do you know Sally? So I look over to the guy standing next to me, and he's like, oh, please, bleed me right. out.
Right.
Who cares about Sally? I'm here to do business. And that was the perfect difference between men trying to be transactional. Come on, let's just talk about business. And women first starting out by being relational. Now, here's right. where it gets really ugly for men. When we took gender out of it, and we just looked at relational versus transactional, we found that people, whether they were a man or a woman, who focused on being relational first and then talking about business, did better at generating business than people
wow.
who were transactional first and then
wow.
built the relationship.
That's incredible. And anybody who's listening, especially if you're a guy, you're a dude, you know, and you have the hunter model in you, you might want to step back and take a few notes from this, because they found, and you know the statistic, Dr. Meisner, you know that basically they found that if a board of directors on a publicly held company has three or more women on that board, they do 40% better in the marketplace. And it's really about this relationship ideology. And I don't know if you've ever seen Mark Gungor. He's a pastor. He talks about the difference between men and women's brains. And he basically says that men's brains, we have boxes for each thing that we believe in and like. Like, there's a box for fishing. There's a box for, you know, working on a car. There's a box for work. And there's a box that's empty. And none of our boxes touch, okay? But for women, their brain works more like Christmas tree lights. There's a connection. You know, let's go back to that Sally piece. They see Sally, and there's five other subcategories that are attached to that word Sally, and who Sally is connected with, and her business connections, and who she's connected to. And this is incredibly powerful, because in this day and age, in the 21st century of the information age, how many of you have learned that it's very hard to just get business by showing up? It's very hard nowadays. People have been, I guess the word is numbed by marketing and sales and all this, and the economy being down. So now, guess what? The only way you're going to win this game is if you start to plant seeds and you start to give back. And you talk about this, givers gain. You know, by planting those seeds, by creating relationships, eventually people look at you and go, what is his or her secret? I want to know. I want to help them, because they've helped me so much. And this idea of giver's gain, you want to go into that a little bit?
You know, giver's gain is the philosophy of the organization I started, BNI. You mentioned BNI in the introduction.
Right.
We've got thousands of chapters in about 60 countries around the world, and our whole philosophy is predicated on this idea of what goes around comes around. That, you know, if I help other people, that they're going to help me as well. And we're very clear about explaining that this is not a transactional process either. It's not like, hey, Brad, you give me some help here on this, and then I'll help you. No, it's it's about it's about really about building relationships. It's more of a relational process than it is about a transactional process. And so, yeah, it's about, hey, let me help you. Let me build this relationship with you. Find a way that I can assist you, and then hopefully through that relationship, it'll come back around. And it may not even come back around directly from you. It might come back around from somebody that you've talked to about me, and then that's how, you know, it comes back around. It's actually anchored in social capital theory, and it's called the law of reciprocity, and how people who are really there to help one another, when they give first, then others really want to step up and help them in return.
Wow.
Raj, you gotta let me jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, all right. I want to get a turn here. Dr. Meisner, I recently interviewed Gina Best, a graduate of your Referral Marketing Institute, and learned a fair bit about it from chatting with her. I know that you've put together a system and a process to be effective at networking. It's not just showing up and shaking a lot of hands and giving out a lot of business cards and hugging a lot of people. There's some etiquette behind it as well, because I know I'm somewhat of a bull in a china shop and a connector, and sometimes I've done some things where more professional people than me have pointed out, hey, when you do that kind of thing, there's a process for doing it. And so talk about Referral Marketing Institute and how you put together some best practices and etiquette to be effective at networking. It's not like just being a politician and showing up and shaking hands and kissing babies.
You're absolutely right. So the Referral Institute is an organization that I founded about 10 years ago. And sometimes people are confused between BNI and the Referral Institute. The best way to describe it is the Referral Institute is the game plan and BNI is the playing field. So the Referral Institute helps teach people how to build their business through referrals. BNI is the place where you can execute part of that strategy. And the Referral Institute really goes deep and tries to help people build a plan for generating business. And the core to everything I teach in the Referral Institute begins with a concept called the VCP process. VCP stands for visibility, credibility, profitability. First, you have to be visible in the community. People have to know who you are and what you do. And then, and only then, can you establish credibility, where people know who you are, they know what you do, and they know you're good at it. And again, this is chronological. You have to start with visibility, then you have to move to credibility. And then from credibility, you can get to profitability, where people know who you are, they know what you do, they know you're good at it, and they're willing to pass you referrals on an ongoing reciprocal basis. Mm-hmm. What tends to happen is that people meet one another and they try to jump over visibility. They try to jump over credibility. They do that transactional thing. Hi, my name's Ivan. Let's do business. They try to get right to profitability. And that's where networking really goes wrong. In the gender book, in the Business Networking and Sex book, we call that premature solicitation, which you don't want to say fast three times. Get you in trouble. So here's just one other point on this. This is so important. Here's the mentality that people have when they go to networking events, the wrong mentality. I went to an event in the United Kingdom years ago, 900 people in the audience. I was the keynoter, and I asked the 900 people, I said, let me start with a question. How many of you are here today? Raise your hands. If you're here hoping to, just maybe, possibly, sell something. Guys, 900 people raised their hands in the entire room. Okay? Now, here's the next question. I said, all right, second question. How many of you are here today? Raise your hands. Just hoping possibly to buy something. No one raised their hands.
Nice.
Not one single person. This is what I call the networking disconnect. People show up wanting to sell, and nobody's there to buy. And that's why some people absolutely hate networking, because they go to an event and it's sell, sell, sell. Instead, you should be working through the VCP process: visibility, credibility, profitability.
That is fantastic. That is the model. I love that question because that sets the tone for the room. And that's what a lot of these network events, because everybody listening has been to some sort of networking event. And this is the secret agenda that's behind everyone in the room. So everybody wants to sell. And it goes right back to that hunter mentality. I've got to kill something to eat today.
Yeah, it absolutely does. That's what happens. And they're so focused on selling that they really offend or they put people off or they feel like they're being sold to, and that almost never works. Look, inevitably somebody comes up to me when I talk about this in a large audience and somebody says, yeah, but Ivan, I sold something, you know, a month ago at a networking event. And I'm like, guy, even a blind squirrel can find a nut. You know, you'll stumble over business. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about stumbling over business, because you're right. If you hand out a card and somebody happens to be looking for your business at that moment, then you might get a sale. But I'm talking about ongoing referrals. And the only way someone's going to give you an ongoing referral is if they know you and trust you. Because when you give a referral, you give a little bit of your reputation away. If you give a good referral, you enhance your reputation. But if you give a bad referral, you hurt your reputation. And that's why credibility is really the linchpin process of the VCP process.
Yeah.
And then, Brad, I got the next question.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom. Go.
Dr. Meisner, I heard you on a Napoleon Foundation program.
Call me Ivan, please.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Ivan, I heard you on the Napoleon.
You know what PhD? You know what PhD stands for, don't you?
No.
Pilot higher and deeper.
You got statistics, I'm sure, for that, right?
Yeah, probably. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. You go ahead.
No problem. I heard you on a Napoleon Hill Foundation Nightingale Conan program talking about the processes and systems. I think Canadians say processes different than Americans. I think you guys say processes. But the processes and systems, you have people, 6,600 chapters, every continent in the world, mostly entrepreneurs, which is like trying to herd cats. And so you have a big manual and a lot of systems and processes that you put in place to be able to grow the business. It's a business as much as a movement around the world as it is. And so talk about the importance of having those processes, systems, metrics, manuals, and all those things you have.
Yeah, well, listen, they're really, really important. And I want to talk about that, but there's one other piece I want to add to it, because the processes don't work if you don't add sort of the secret sauce to it. But the processes are key, absolutely key. If you want to make your business scalable, you have got to write things down so that other people can understand the process. And then you have to train people on how to do that process effectively. So you have to have the systems, you have to have the process, and you have to stick to it. I really believe that if you want to be successful in business, you have to do 6 things 1,000 times, not 1,000 things 6 times. And by writing things down and having the process and having the system and doing it over and over and over again consistently, I believe that you have a much greater chance of success. Now, we're all about systems, and you're right. We literally, in B&I, have a 900-page manual on how to run a 1.5-hour meeting. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but there's a lot of aspects to a B&I meeting beyond the 1.5-hour meeting. And so we have a system, but here's the secret sauce to it. People don't care about how to do something until they understand why they should do something. People don't care about how until they understand why. And so, you know, where my program is run best, it's run by people who really spend time training and explaining the why to various aspects so that you get buy-in. And once you have buy-in, magic happens. People want to help one another. And that's why you see, I mean, literally, we have new numbers now from the numbers you reported in last year, we just got these numbers in, last year we generated 6.6 million referrals, and from that, the members passed $8.6 billion worth of business for each other all around the world. $8.6 billion. Just so you know, $8.6 billion is the same as the gross domestic product for the country of Liechtenstein. Okay, it's a small country, I know, but still. How cool is that, that we could generate as much business as a small nation in the world? I'm looking for a bigger nation next year, but I still think it's pretty good.
There you go. Hey, Tom, right, I just wanted to jump in here real quick. We were actually talking about this before you came on the podcast today, and that is I've been an entrepreneur for over 35 plus years, and Tom as well has been an entrepreneur, and it's that shift into process and systems that you can count on that sets one entrepreneur apart from actually having a solid business that can grow, that you can count on, that you can actually say, I have a structure. And I think this is incredibly important for a lot of people out there who are winging it, and they're trying to find that next piece of business, and they're panicking. And you threw a little bit of Bruce Lee in there, and that is, you know, I don't fear the guy who does 1,000 different kicks. I fear the guy who does one kick 1,000 times, which goes back to the karate metaphor. But it's like, if you get good at 6 things really well, that's what you're going to get known for, and that ties into your credibility part.
Yeah, very true. Absolutely correct. It really is about, you know, consistency and doing things that work. And you may say, well, how do you know if you work well? If they work well, you know, you in what you're doing, you find things that work consistently. But to be honest with you, the best thing to do is to model other people who are successful. Look at others who have been really successful and apply those concepts over and over and over again.
That is so true.
Ivan, let's talk about some of the things probably people don't talk about, because it's all about, again, transactional, male-based networking a lot of times, but black belt in karate, an amateur magician. Well, first of all, Brad is a black belt in karate as well. I see lots of these pictures on Facebook of him kicking somebody's butt. And an amateur magician, how do you find time to do that? And where do you use the magic, and where do you do karate? Because those are pretty cool pastimes.
Well, you know, I started getting into magic when my kids were little. I actually went to a magic store. It was a toy store, and they had some magic there, and I did a couple of magic tricks for my daughter, and she was like, oh, that's fantastic, show me another one. And I ran out, and so I went back to the store and I bought like every magic trick they had. And if you can find something that your kids think you're good at or are impressed with, then you go in with both feet. And I ended up starting to collect. I found a magic store that had professional magic. And I just started buying professional magic tricks, and ended up collecting an amazing collection of magic. Joined the Academy of Magical Arts, which is known as the Magic Castle in Los Angeles, and the magician member for probably close to 20 years. I am an amateur magician, though. I don't do professional gigs. The only gigs I've ever done were for my kids and at their birthday parties.
Wow.
But it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Still a member of the Magic Castle, even though my kids are grown up and out of the house. For martial arts, I got back into martial arts when I broke my leg, and I needed to rehabilitate, and I found it to be a great way to do that, and stuck with it until I don't know. Brad, you're the martial artist, is that right?
Yes, I am. I'm a first degree black belt in the mixed martial art of Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu, which
nice.
Is kind of like what you see on the UFC. And ironically, I've broken bones at my dojo. you joined to rehabilitate. I joined and started getting broken bones.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how you feel about this, but I was told when I started the program that a first degree is a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was nonsense until I became a first degree black belt, and then I fully understand how they truly are beginners.
It is true. I liken it to this. Everybody's like, oh, you're a black belt. I go, look, if you went to college to become a doctor or a surgeon, let's say, you go through 8 years, then a residency, and all this. You're not yet a surgeon, okay? You are. When they let you go and let you operate on your own, that's when you're a surgeon. And it's the same with the black belt. I've trained, so now I can at least know what I'm doing at the basic level. That's really what it is. Right. You are truly a beginner.
Yeah, very true. So those are a lot of, you know, some of the fun things that I've done in life, other than business.
Always nice to have kids around when there's a magician. So you must be very popular at friends and neighbors and that sort of thing.
Well, my kids are now, the youngest is 21, so they don't bring their kids around, their friends around too much anymore.
There you go. Well, I've noticed this next generation, and this ties in actually to how things have changed over the years. I'm sure you've noticed that your children are very different than previous generations. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, of course. Millennials are definitely different than the baby boomers and even the Gen Xers out there.
Right. Well, I first started noticing this back in the 90s. I started one of the first dot-com companies to build websites and things like this. And within less than 3 years, we were a publicly traded company and 60 employees in offices worldwide. And most of my staff was telling me off. And I said, what is in the Kool-Aid? You know, it was what's in the drinking water? And I started to realize that this next generation is very different than the previous generations. And I don't know if you want to talk about this in the go-giving model and also the Marketing Institute and BNI. Have you noticed a shift in this new generation? Are they hungrier to learn the techniques? Is it harder to get them to come on board and see the value added of what you do?
We have a pretty sizable population of under 30 in our organization. The largest percentage has remained pretty consistently in the 40s. But that even started in day one back in 1985 when I started BNI, because we don't teach this in colleges and universities anywhere in the world. We don't teach people how to network. It's not in the curriculum. And so what would happen when I started BNI, most of the people who were joining were people who'd been in business, they'd struggled, they knew how difficult it was to generate business through referrals, and they gravitated to a process. So we didn't have too many, you know, people in their 20s. When I started BNI, I was 28 years old. I was, for the first 10 chapters, the youngest person in my organization. So even then, there weren't young people. So, we don't see a huge percentage in BNI. It's, I don't know, have the exact number, but I would guess it's around 20%, maybe a little more. They're in BNI that are, under 30. But I think part of that really is because we still don't teach networking in colleges and universities anywhere in the world. And what we see happen is that when people start getting into their late 20s or early 30s, they have enough experience under their belt to recognize, hey, this is a great way to get business. And they end up joining the organization. Our youngest member is 16. He had to get his parents' permission to join.
Wow.
And you'll love this. He runs a martial arts studio.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
That's cool.
He actually owns a martial arts studio. With his parents are the legal owners of it, but he's the sensei. And you'll love this. Our oldest BNI member just turned 100.
Wow.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And he's a roofing contractor, if you can believe that.
Right there. That's a testament to what you do. Right there.
Amazing.
we aren't taught the skills. We truly aren't taught what the skills are to not only network properly, but to create relationships in business as well as life. And I think this is the key that's missing. We've all been taught that the skills that we have at home as parents don't translate into the business world and vice versa. And we're starting to learn that the skills and the credibility and the value that you bring to the table truly are, they can go back and forth. And you bring that out in the business world.
They can and do. And I think the other piece of it is the culture that you create in your organization. Because I really believe that culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Yes, I do as well.
As important as strategy is, and I'm really a process-oriented, systems-oriented guy, I realize that culture is really the key. That if you can create a culture of cooperation and participation and full engagement, you're much more likely to have a successful organization.
Amen. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to your assistant, Anne Marie Longenecker.
Yeah.
That lady is amazing. She should be giving courses around the world on how to be an efficient, amazing assistant. I've done hundreds of these radio shows, and she came up with questions and ideas and a few things. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Have backup numbers, all these things. And so give me a shout out to Anne Marie, but she made me cross my heart and hope to die that I wouldn't keep you longer than 45 minutes.
Well, thank you, and I'll make sure and pass that on to her, and I'm sure she'll hear that in this interview. I appreciate you saying that very much.
Great.
Well, thanks so much for your time today, Ivan and Brad.
Yes, thank you so much. It was a real honor.
Thank you. If I can leave you with one last thought, I think one of the most important things I've learned in the last 30 years of running the world's largest networking organization is that it's not what you know or who you know that counts. It's how well you know each other. That's the key. It's all about going deep and building relationships, and that's how you build a powerful personal network. Thanks for the interview, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And
thanks,
if anyone's interested, they can go to bni.com for my website for the company, or ivanmeisner.com for my blog. A lot of free content up there, ivanmeisner.com.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, gentlemen.